to any doubts you have.
So in the last verse, chapter 3, verse 55, Krishna said that neither by the study of the Vedas nor by penance, that is by tapas, nor by dana, by charity, nor by ijaya, that is by sacrifice. Sacrifice here meaning all types of prayers, rituals we do. No matter whatever you do, whatever sadhanas you do that he has mentioned here, you will not be able to see this Vishwarupa, this darshanam of the Lord as the world. So what is the key element missing there? What is it that is, we can do everything, we can keep all our tapas, all our fasts, we can study the scriptures, we can give tremendous amount of charity also, we can give, all this we can do. But what is that one element that Krishna says is missing if you want to come to this ultimate vision of the world as the Lord? And what is that which is missing? So that is what he wants to tell us in the last two verses. And in verse 54, he identifies, so he uses the word two. If you can see in the Sanskrit in verse 54, in the very first line, Bhaktiya Tva, that actually that is not TV, it's TU, two. So the word two there is to indicate that there is, apart from the disciplines is mentioned in verse 53, there is one discipline that we all need, very important discipline. And that discipline is what he wants to highlight, is called bhakti. Devotion must be there. We study the scriptures, it must be with devotion, not mechanically study the scriptures. If we give dhanam, there must be that sense of devotion or love that I am doing this for the Lord. If we keep fast or we keep any tapas, whatever austerities that we keep, it must be with love and devotion for the Lord. And he calls this as ananya bhakti. You see the word in the first line, ananyaya bhakti. Ananyaya bhakti is that single pointed devotion. And what does this special ananya bhakti mean? If we recall back to chapter 7, verse 16, that is where he gave us the description of this ananya bhakti. Chapter 7, verse 16, page 142. If you recall in this verse, he gave us the four levels of bhakti. He said, I have four types of devotees. Artha, Arthati, Jignyashu and Jnani. And these four types of devotees, we can combine into three levels. The Artha and the Arthati, meaning the one who wants obstacles removed from their life, they also are devotees of God because they approach God to remove obstacles in their life. And there are those Arthati Bhaktis which want something in their life. They want promotion, they want money, they want fame, etc. These two Bhaktas we can combine into one Bhakta, into one type of devotion. And what is that devotion? That devotion where they use God as the means and the world as the end. So they still approach God, but God is not their destination, God is not their goal. They use God as the means, and what they want is the world as the end. So that is one type of devotee. Yet he says that they are devotees of mine. The second type of devotee is the Jignyashu. The difference between the first group and the Jignyashu is that, what is the difference? The world is the means, but God is the end. They use the world as the means to attain God, which is the end. Whereas the first group of devotees use God as the means and the world is the end. So when they use the world, meaning what? I use all my resources, I use this body, whatever I have, name, fame, money, whatever I have, I use these resources with the aim that achieve God as the end. Then the third type of devotee is the jnani. What is the difference? God is neither the means nor the end, but God is both the means and the end also. That is, God is me, myself. So these four devotees can be classified into three different levels of bhakti. God calls them all Sukriti, no, they are all virtuous people. Because at least they think about me. Whether they want to achieve worldly goals or they want to achieve spiritual goals. Now, here when we come back to our verse for today, the verse number 54. Here when he's talking about Ananya Bhakti, he's talking about the Jignyashu Bhakta. The one who uses the world to make God as the goal. So Ananya Bhakti is that focused bhakti where I have not reached God. I have not attained God, but God is my goal. So here when he's talking about Ananya Bhakti is that selfless bhakti or sakama bhakti where we want God as our goal. Right? So what do we do? Initially our devotion is what? We go to temple, we do prayers, but we use Ishvara, God, as the worldly goal. But here the person has understood that God is now the goal and I use the world to achieve the goal which is God. So Ananya Bhakti is that one who is constantly striving to use the world and attain God. Okay? So this is the second level of bhakti, because what is the final level of bhakti? When we use the world to attain God, ultimately we will come to God as the goal, which means I realize there is no difference between me and God. So God and the devotee become one. So that is the third and the final step. But here he is talking about the second level, the Jignyashu Bhakta. Okay? So now Krishna says, only when you make me as the goal, Ananya Bhakti, with Ananya Bhakti, then only I can be drashtum, then only I can be seen. Seen, when he says drashtum, seen means not that we can see God, but we can realize that the whole world is nothing but the appearance of God. So drashtum means that inner vision, not the seeing God, but the inner vision. So drashtum, tatvena nyatum. Nyatum means I can be known. In due course of time, you will know me. As what? Tatvena. Tatvena means the only thing which is real in this world. Everything else is false. By having Ananya Bhakti, single-pointed devotion, I will eventually come to know that only God is the only thing which is real in the world. And what is our definition of real? When we say God is the only real thing in this world, what is our definition of reality? That does not change in all periods of time. Yesterday remains the same, today is the same, and tomorrow will remain the same. That is what we call God, that is what we call reality. Whereas if we compare it to any other relationship we have, can we call it as real? Cannot, because it keeps on changing. The person also keeps on changing, and eventually the person also will cease to exist. Whatever relationships you have apart from God will always be constantly subject to change, whether it is with a person or whether it is with an object also. So ultimately the person will come to understand. Jnatu means know or to understand. Tatvena, that God is the only true reality. And once one comes to understand that God is the only true reality, then what happens? Praveshtu. Then only you can enter or merge or be one with God. So from Ananya Bhakti, single-pointed devotion, you come to know that God is the only reality. Once you accept God as the only reality, then only you can praveshtum, meaning to enter and become one with God. And again, once again, what do we mean by enter and become one with God? What do we mean by enter and become one with God? How do you realize? What do you mean by realization? That you are one with God. What is that realization? What is that realization? There is no difference between you and God. So, self-realization, merging with God, becoming one with God is, while living, we come to that realization, we drop that ignorance that God is sitting somewhere else and I am somewhere else. That God is something else and I am something else. I come to accept that the divinity in me is the same as the supreme divine consciousness. So that is our own ignorance that has got to be removed. Once we remove that ignorance, we and God are one. We have merged with God. That is what he means here by praveshtu. I can be entered into. You can become the bhakta, the devotee, and the Lord becomes one. So that is the end or the fruit of all our sadhanas, is to drop this ignorance that God is somewhere different, God is something different than me. And when I say me means who? Is it the body? Is it the mind? Is it the intellect? It is the consciousness that is enlivening the body, that is enlivening the mind, that is enlivening the intellect. That is the real me, which is no different than the total consciousness. Aham Brahma Asmi, Aham Atma Asmi. Okay. So that is verse 54. And thus in verse 55 now, he wants to summarize the list of sadhanas. Because this verse 55 is the capsule verse that is going to introduce chapter 12. So here he wants to summarize what is the definition of bhakti. See, we must be very clear, because we use this word bhakti very loosely, you know. We think bhakti is another sadhana. But here the Bhagavad Gita wants to stress that bhakti is not one sadhana. It is a collection of five sadhanas actually. In chapter 12, he will break down bhakti into a collection of five sadhanas. But here it is a capsule verse, so he will just list down in a very concise form what is bhakti. Okay? Now, the first level of bhakti, okay, is called Karma Lakshana Bhakti. Karma Lakshana is spelled L-A-K-S-H-A-N-A, Lakshana Bhakti. What does the word Lakshana mean? Lakshana means in the form of. So, karma, action in the form of bhakti. Now, what does that mean? All the actions that we do, we can call karma. But how does karma become bhakti? When we dedicate all our actions to God. So karma, all the actions that we do, whether it is worldly actions, our duties and responsibilities, or whether it is going to temple and praying to God, every action, karma, can be converted to karma yoga, under one condition, that it must have the very essence of bhakti, devotion to the Lord. If there is no devotion to the Lord, every action just becomes an action. There is no spiritual growth. There is no internal purity if we don't perform our actions with the right attitude. That's why from the beginning I've said, what is the definition of karma yoga? Right action plus right attitude. That is what makes karma yoga. Otherwise, it is just karma. So, karma lakshana bhakti has got also two stages. Has got two different components. When I do any actions, I play two roles. What are the two roles? First, I am a karta. I am a doer. I am a performer of all actions. That is the first role I play. Secondly, whatever actions I do as a karta, there will be a result. that is a karma phalam. And who receives this result? The doer receives it, right? The karta also is the one who receives the result. So therefore, in karma yoga, I have two roles to play. I am the doer and I am the receiver of the result. Therefore, my attitude must be very correct in both these stages. As a doer, my attitude must be correct. When I receive the results also, my attitude must be correct. So what is the right attitude? As a doer, I dedicate all my actions to Lord. Therefore, when I dedicate all my actions to Lord, whatever action it is, what happens? Not the result. When I'm just the doer, I dedicate all my actions to Lord, that means whatever I'm doing, I'm not doing for myself, I'm not doing for my family, I'm not doing for others, I'm doing for who? For Lord. I am serving your creation. Lord is the creator, this is his creation, I am serving your creation. So what happens when I am when I have this attitude? What happens when I have this attitude? I am no longer the doer, and every action is converted into a worship. Every action becomes a worship. Just like if I go to the altar, I place some fruits at the altar, I am offering these fruits to Lord, what happens? My action has been converted into a worship. So, the actions are the imaginary fruit which I offer to the Lord. Just like I offer fruit, what am I offering to the Lord? My actions I am offering to the Lord. I am surrendering my actions to the Lord. So, as a karta, every action is converted into a worship if I keep this attitude constantly in my mind. Then, the result will come. And we say the result also comes from Lord. So as a devotee of Lord, I cannot reject whatever comes from Lord. Whether it is favorable, of course we all want favorable results, but together with favorable, there is also unfavorable results. And when I have this attitude that everything favorable and unfavorable I accept as prasadam, that is the second attitude of the karma yogi. So as a karta, my action is converted to worship. As a bhokta, as a receiver of the karma phalam, I accept with an attitude of Ishvara Prasada Buddhi, my mind is not disturbed. So my mind is very steady when I perform actions and whatever results I get. So that is called what? That is called bhakti, karma lakshana bhakti. When there is devotion to God, then that action becomes a very form of my devotion to the Lord. Karma lakshana bhakti. So that is bhakti with karma. Then we come to the second stage, which is called upasana lakshana bhakti. So now, you see, we have been using the word bhakti very loosely as devotion. Actually, the correct word to be used is upasana. Upasana is two words. Asana is to sit, upa is near, to sit near God. So at times of devotion, we bring our mind to sit near God. So prayer does not become mechanical. We go to temple, we don't just, you know, throw flowers like that, put fruit and come off and just go around, break few coconuts and come off. What is the most important thing when we are doing all this? The mind is close to God. So even whether we offer anything or don't offer, the most important is whether our mind is being focused on God, fixed on God, throughout the duration of our prayer. So upasana lakshana bhakti is the second stage. First is karma lakshana bhakti, then we come to upasana lakshana bhakti. Now why is the second stage important? What is the necessity of the second stage? If I am already offering my actions to Bhagwan, my actions are already converted to prayers, then what is the point of bringing my mind also close to Bhagwan? That means doing rituals, prayers, chanting mantras, etc. Mantras are also, they are called mantras, they have the word what? Mana, meaning What does mantra mean therefore? The mantras that we chant help to what we call transcend the mind and bring it closer to God. So its mantra means that which helps us to transcend the mind. That's why the word man is there in mantra. That's why when you are driving, especially the most dangerous time, why is it the most dangerous time? Driving is very mechanical, right? And that is the time when your mind tends to run. Right? Yesterday's thoughts, tomorrow's things, what somebody said 5 years ago, what this. Cooking, mechanical, driving, all mechanical actions are the most dangerous because that's the time when the mind tends to run. So what do? To bring the mind back? Use the mantra. The mantra is the one that transcends and brings our mind to God. So mantras are useful for that purpose. Whenever the mind is running, start chanting the mantras. So why is this Upasana Yoga very important? If Karma Yoga is there, why is Upasana Yoga also important? Karma Yoga makes us extrovert. Everything is actions dedicated outwardly. So in Karma Yoga, the mind becomes extrovert. But to discover the divinity, what we have to do? We have to turn inward. So Upasana helps us to turn the mind inward. By bringing the mind and focusing it on God, it helps to purify or rather turn our mind inward. That's why Upasana, prayers, rituals, chanting mantras, etc., meditation are all a form of Upasana. To convert our mind and make it internal, to bring it internal. So that is also called Upasana Lakshana Bhakti. The second stage, that is Upasana, meditation on God in the form of Bhakti. So Bhakti also must be there to make the mind tune into God. So first level is Karma, second level is Upasana. And then finally we come to the third level, which is called Jnana Lakshana Bhakti. So studying the scriptures, reciting the scriptures with the devotion or love for God becomes Jnana Lakshana Bhakti. And that's why the Gita also is divided along these three main sadhanas. The first six chapters are Karma Lakshana Bhakti. The middle six chapters which we have gone through is Upasana Lakshana Bhakti. And finally the last six chapters are called the Jnana Lakshana Bhakti. So Karma, Upasana, Jnana are all covered there. And what is Jnana? Jnana is three steps. That is Shravanam, listening to the spiritual discourses. Mananam, doing reflection. Why do we do reflection? To get clarity, to remove all our doubts, we do reflection. And then there is Nididhyasanam, which is putting that knowledge into practice, and it includes meditation also. So hence Karma to Upasana to Jnana and then to Moksha also. So in all the three, what is the important thing? Bhakti. So Bhakti is not a sadhana. Bhakti must be in Karma, Bhakti must be in Upasana, Bhakti must be in Jnana also. Bhakti is the support for all the three sadhanas also. And that will eventually lead us to Moksha. So now here in this closing verse, this is what Krishna wants to summarize. Right? So first he says, Mat Karma Krim. You see the first, Mat Karma Krim. Perform all actions, the word karma is there, for whose sake? Mat, for my sake. Dedicate all your actions to me. Which means what? Be a karma yogi. As a karta, as a bhokta, dedicate all your actions to me. So the karma yoga comes in this first instruction. Mat karma krim. Mentally dedicate all actions to me and accept whatever results as prasadam. So first be a karma yogi. What is the next one? Next instruction. Mat bhakta. See the second line, Mad Bhakta, be my devotee. Which means which sadhana? Out of the three, first was Mad Karma is Karma Yogi, Upasana. Upasana, be devoted to me. So, do your chanting of your prayers, your mantras, do your rituals, offer flowers to Bhagwan, offer fruits, go to temple. All that is part of Upasana to bring your mind to God. So he says, Mad Bhakta, be my devotee. Practice to bring your mind gradually to me through all the means of rituals and all that, japa, etc. And finally, the third one, Mat Parama. The third one is Mat Parama, which means keep me as the supreme. Param is supreme. Keep me as the supreme goal. That you must not lose sight that all the actions we are doing, all the karmas I'm doing, all the prayers I'm doing, what is my ultimate goal? It's God. I must not forget that. I must always keep that goal in mind. Mat Parama. So, keep me as the supreme goal. So, what does it mean? It means that you move from world dependence, initially you're dependent on the world, to God dependence, you become dependent on God, to self-dependence. So move your mind from world dependence to God dependence to self-dependence. That means what? Do not lean on the changing world for your happiness. Do not lean on the changing world for your security. So learn to change and depend for your security, for your happiness onto God. That is Mat Parama. So make moksha as your primary goal. And finally he says, Sangha Varjita. Varjita means be devoid. Devoid of what? Sangha, attachment. So the only way you can attach your mind to God is how? If you detach from the world. And why would you want to detach from the world? See, detachment must not be out of frustration, you know. Detachment must not be out of anger. What must detachment be out of? Because many people cannot fail in life. They say, I'll be detached from the world. That is not detachment. Arjuna wanted to run away from the battlefield. He says, I'm being detached. But actually, why was he running away? Because he couldn't face doing his duty. So running away from your duties and responsibilities is not detachment. So under what condition should you detach? What is the right basis or foundation of detachment? Knowledge. What type of knowledge? What type of discrimination? Understanding that the world is constantly changing. The world is not for me to be dependent upon. So it is an intelligent withdrawal. It's not a withdrawal by force. It is clearly understanding what is the world. That's why in Upanishads explain three things to us. Jiva, Jagat, Brahman. Jiva first understand you, the individual. Who are you, the individual? Who am I? Then understand Jagat. Jagat is constantly changing. Understand the nature of Jagat. So if I am not to depend on the Jagat, then why is the world there? If you say detached from the world, then what is the purpose of the world? The world is for me to do my service. The world is for me to discharge my duties and responsibilities and grow spiritually. The world is not for me to indulge and get lost in the world. So the world has a purpose. My family has a purpose. My life has a purpose. The society has a purpose. I am to do my discharge, my service to the world and grow spiritually. And thus I must understand my nature. I must understand Jagat, the nature of the world, and then I must understand Brahm, the nature of God. Jeev, Jagat, Brahm, or Jeev, Jagat, Ishvara. These are the three main topics which are talked about in the Upanishads, which are also discussed in the Gita also. So he says, Sangha Varjita, be devoid of attachment from the world. Do not be dependent on external objects for your happiness, for your security. Then he says, very important point there, Nirvaira Sarva Bhuteshu. So this detachment also, Nirvaira means free from enmity. Don't detach because you hate the world. Don't detach because you hate people. So be free from the enmity. Love everybody, but don't be dependent on them. Give your love, give your service, but don't be dependent on people for your happiness, for your security. So Nirvaira means be free from enmity, from what? Sarva Bhuteshu, towards all beings. Do not harbor hatred, do not harbor disgust, and because of that you withdraw from the world. So Krishna says don't have a hatred for external things. So Sangha Varjita also means free from Raga Dvesha, because this is what generally we base our life on. So when we have Raga Dvesha, when we have likes and dislikes, Raga makes us run towards things we like. Dvesha makes us run away from things we don't like. So either we are running towards things we like or running away from things we don't like. Raga Dvesha. So get over that, transcend that Raga Dvesha. Okay? So that means three things now is telling you here. To summarize, one, develop Viveka. Have that power of discrimination to understand what is your role, what is the role of the world. Viveka. Number two, develop Vairagyam. Vairagyam means detachment. So first is Viveka, use your intellect to discriminate. Number two, develop Vairagyam, that is to detach from the world. And when you detach from the world, what happens to your mind? If you don't depend on the world for your happiness and security, what happens to your mind? It's not at peace, you'll go mad. Why? Because when you detach your mind from something, you must attach it. So the third quality is develop mumukshutvam, develop the desire for moksha. So you have the power of discrimination, number one. Number two, detach, vairagyam. Number three, attach, mumukshutvam. Don't leave the mind blank. Don't leave the mind empty. Once you detach from the world, you must attach to God, mumukshutvam. So these are the three qualities that he is talking about here in a bhakta. And if such a person has all these qualities, what happens? He says here, saha, such a person, eti, attains what? Maam, he attains me, he attains God. So if we follow these three qualities, if we follow these three sadhanas, which he will expand in chapter 12, that's why this is a what we call a capsule verse that is introducing us to chapter 12. If a devotee has all these three qualities, Krishna gives a promise, saha maam eti, the person will attain me. Pandava, he addresses addresses Arjuna as Pandava. So all the right conditions that lead us to moksha are explained here. Okay? And once we have that desire, we don't have to worry where will knowledge come from, where will guru come from, where will scripture come from. That God himself has said in chapter 10 verse 10. Then it becomes his responsibility to make all the conditions right for you. Only if you have the desire that you want to attain knowledge, you want to attain moksha, then it is God's responsibility to make sure that all the right conditions are there. So ultimately everything will be supplied if your thoughts, if your desires, if your intentions are correct. Okay? And thus ends this chapter 11. So now we can take any questions you have on this chapter or any other chapter, whatever, to clear up your doubts. Yes. Exactly, yes, you're right.
That's not easy. Let's say in a day,
right.
24 hours.
Right.
Start off the day.
Right.
With God.
Right.
Halfway through, you're losing
him. Somewhere you forget him, yeah.
Yeah, especially, you know, the challenges that you face.
Right.
So, how does one keep up with this feeling at least with that 24 hours?
You see, the thing is, first thing you said very important, is to start the day correctly. we often don't start the day correctly. When the minute we jump out of bed, first, where is our mind? Straight away on the world. Office, work, coffee, whatever it is. So straight away our mind jumps to the world. So that's why the first thing very important is to start the day correctly. How? By all this reading of the scriptures, by saying your mantras, by doing your prayers, we must start off the day in the right way. Once we start off the day in the right way, then that goes into our subconscious mind. It is just like exercise. If you only go to the gym on a Sunday, are you going to be healthy? No, you're not going to be healthy. Everybody says you must go at least 3 or 4 times a week. Once you go 3 or 4 times a week, gradually what you see? Your body changing, your body becoming healthier. All that effort you put, regular effort, only you can see that. So first of all, we must start the day correctly. That is our mistake. We don't start the day correctly. We start the day correctly, you will find that that sense of devotion will last for you at least throughout the day. And then what happens? We have many opportunities in between that we never use to focus our mind on God. Like what? Like I just mentioned, you're driving to work. Where is your mind? On lunch. What are you going to eat for lunch? What is going to happen in the office? What should you be doing? Hear some bhajans. Recite some mantras. Again, bring your mind back again into focus. Third opportunity, before you eat, what do you do? Say the food prayer. So you have many opportunities in the day which we miss to bring our mind back to God. Yes, from time to time your mind would stray. Doesn't matter, but at least you use those opportunities to bring your mind to God. Come back in the evening, first thing what we do? Switch on the TV. Right? What should you do? At least come back. You come back from the world outside. So many things have happened. At least come back, spend 5 minutes quiet in reflection of the Lord. Meditation, whatever it is, chant your mantras. 5 minutes. That will bring your mind back again to focus again. And then before you sleep, again the same thing again. So if we do this practice throughout the day, slowly and slowly, we find that the gunas will change. What happens? Sattvic gunas get stronger. And then you find that you don't have to stress yourself to think about God. It will be naturally there in your subconscious mind. But you have to start this practice. Find every opportunity before you eat your food, when you wake up in the morning, before you go to sleep, every opportunity that you can find while you're driving, any mechanical action you're doing, while you're waiting for an appointment. Suppose you're going to see a client. You're waiting there 10 minutes. What do you do? Our favorite toy. Doesn't matter. In fact, what can you do here? You can read articles, spiritual articles. You can hear bhajans. So what happens? Your mind is tuned back again to God. Take that every opportunity throughout your day. Don't waste it. Until the thought of God just becomes mechanical. You don't have to force yourself to think of God. Okay? Any other question?
How do you dilute strong muscles?
How do you dilute strong vasanas? Okay. Vasanas came about because of what?
Desires.
Desires came out due to what? Where did this vasana suddenly come about? They are in you, but where did they come about from? The gunas came about because of what? Karma. Your own actions. Your own actions have produced these vasanas which are now in you as gunas. So therefore, how do you counter-react any strong vasana? By doing the opposite vasana. Whatever that is strong in you, you have to take the opposite vasana. So whatever the desires you have, that can only be counter-reacted by another vasana. One vasana will replace this. And it's not going to be overnight again. Because this vasana is strong. So whatever opposite actions you do, it will take time again to dilute this vasana also. So the only way to dilute your vasanas, which is due to your own past actions, is to create new actions which are opposite to the vasanas which you want to dilute. And you can do it, why? Because you have the free will. You have the free will. You can change your actions, you can change your thoughts, you can change your future. If the present is a result of your past, then the future is a result of your present. So vasanas can be changed with your own effort. Right? Again, the same thing we come back to. If you have led a decadent life, you eat all kind of fast foods, you don't exercise, you know, what happens? You put on weights, you have a lot of health issues. So these are what? Vasanas which have resulted from your own wrong actions. Now you want to correct yourself, what do? You put all the opposite actions in, right? You start eating healthy food, you start going out to exercise, right? All this, and then what happens? Slowly you get healthier and healthier and healthier. So it is very practical, we just think about it. Where do the vasanas come? From my own actions. How do I dilute these vasanas? With new actions. What type of actions? Which are totally opposite to what I have done before. Right? And that we have that willpower, we can do it. It's just whether we want to do it. That's why sometimes satsang is very important. Going to temples, going for bhajans, mixing with the like-minded people helps us slowly to change our wrong ways also. The first thing important, start with satsang. Very important. Right? Then your thoughts will change, your desires will change, your ideas will change. Yes.
So in terms of the visual world, see, because we have the Ananya Bhakti with the mind and emotion, does that mean we are already closer to moksha, or is it preparing for any level of different lifetimes?
Sorry, are you closer to moksha, or what do you say?
Are you already coming to a closer stage of
to moksha, okay, or?
When you get the visual world, or right. It can also happen at any different part, lifetime, throughout the different stages of life.
That means whether it can happen in this life or the next life. The moksha, you're talking about moksha.
No, the visual, yeah.
Okay, if you already have a Vishwarupa Darshanam, that means you're basically already at the second level already. Right? So with that, all you need is what now? You need knowledge. Right? Because earlier with bhakti, you were engaged in knowledge. You were doing all kinds of sadhanas. Because of your strong bhakti, you got this Vishwarupa Darshanam. That means God is everywhere. God is the world. So all you need now is basically what is keeping you away from moksha is only one thing. That is your, what we call your Sanchit Karmas, your warehouse of karmas. Okay? So now, your present karmas, your prarabdha karmas, you have to exhaust until this body drops. You can't do anything about it, okay? And the sanchit karmas, which are the warehouse of karmas, you also cannot do anything because they will force you to take another birth. But once you get this Vishwarupa Darshanam, and with knowledge of God, Aham Brahma Asmi, Atma Asmi, then what happens? You only have to wait for this body to drop, which means the prarabdha karmas are burnt. Once you have the vision of God, all your actions, your thoughts have changed. That means there's no new karmas being created. So agami karmas are gone. And because you become a jnani, God will burn away your sanchita karmas. So it can happen, most likely will be in this life, if you get the Vishwarupa Darshanam and you get a guru who will guide you on this knowledge, until you accept Aham Brahma Asmi, then this can be the last life. Or if you don't happen to get that guru and get that knowledge, then perhaps maybe one more life. But yes, you are right, you are very close already to moksha. Because that is the, if you talk about three stages, then that is the second stage. Moksha will be the final stage. So thus, those who are born, like Ramakrishna Paramahansa, Bhagavan Ramana Maharishi, those who have already had that darshanam in their past life, now they just come in the final life and they attain moksha. Right?
Okay. When you say moksha, you say
right.
Moksha.
Right.
When you say moksha is when you are no attachment, or how do you actually
okay.
define moksha?
Moksha, again, I've explained before, there are two types of moksha. One is called Jivan Mukti, which is moksha while we are living. Now, what is the characteristic of a Jivan Mukta? Characteristic of a Jivan Mukta is given in chapter 2, verses 50. Fifty-five to 72, the closing 18 verses of chapter 2, the Stita Prajna. Stita Prajna is another name for Jivan Mukta. Stita means steady, Prajna means wisdom. So the man of steady wisdom, endowed with this knowledge, how does he live his life? In relation to people, in relation to objects, in relation to situations in life, Krishna has described this Jivan Mukta very beautifully in the 18 verses of chapter 2. Then again he describes this Stita Prajna or Jivan Mukta again in chapter 14 when Arjuna asks this question. If you go to chapter 14 verse number 21, page 265. So Stita Prajna is the same as Jivan Mukta, as the same as the question that Arjuna is asking in chapter 14 verse 21, page 265. What are the marks of him who has risen above the three gunas? So who has transcended tamasic, transcended rajasic, transcended sattvic guna. What are the marks? So in verses 22 onwards again, Krishna paints the picture of a Jivan Mukta, Stita Prajna. So this is what we call the first stage of moksha, which is called Jivan Mukti. While alive, one is free from the shackles of life. Once one becomes a Jivan Mukta, then comes the second stage where one does not take another birth, which is called, Vidheha Mukta. Deha is body. Vidheha means no body, so you don't have to come back for another birth. But in order to get Vidheha Mukta, first you must get what? Jivan Mukta. You must get Jivan Mukta first. So you cannot automatically come to Vidheha Mukti. So first of all, while living, you must become a Jivan Mukta. How do you know if you are getting close to be a Jivan Mukta? Look at all the qualities which are given in chapter 2, the last 18 verses, or chapter 14, verses 22 to 25. Okay, 22, 23, 24, 25. These four verses, again, Krishna explains the qualities of a one who has transcended the three gunas. So it's the same. Stita Prajna is the same as Jivan Mukta, is the same as one who has transcended the three gunas. So these are all checklists for us that to know whether are we moving in the right direction. And it's very practical. How is our relationship to people? How is our relationship to object? What do we do with our desires? How do we handle or control our desires? All that is given there. Right. The one who has lost, given up ahankara. Yeah. Of course, all these are barriers to our spiritual growth. So what are the barriers? Anything that makes us demoniac. And what are the qualities of the demoniac? Also, that also Krishna has given in chapter 16. Chapter 16 is called a division between divine and demoniac qualities. So again, the divine qualities are 20 qualities which are given in verses 1, 2 and 3. Right? All the divine qualities like harmlessness, truthfulness, tranquility of mind, abstaining from malicious talk, all these, if we cultivate, are all divine qualities. What are demoniac qualities? If you look at verse 4, exactly you will see the same thing. Hypocrisy, arrogance, pride, anger, harshness. The more and more of these qualities we have, we become more demoniac. More demoniac means what? We are more further and further away from God. So, the more ahankar we develop, the more arrogance, the hypocrisy, the anger, the more of these qualities we have, the more we stray away from God. And more difficult becomes moksha also.
So somebody like
you
may be give up body at the age of 39, was it because he had attained that stage?
Okay. Again, we look back at the three karmas. That means his prarabdha karmas had come to an end. So he had to give up the body. Only question we have to ask is, did he come back to another birth? That we won't know. But we can presume that he was such a great saints, right, that he did not come back for another birth. So he basically had to live and finish up his prarabdha karmas, and that came at the age of 39, isn't it? He passed away. 39, he gave up. So his prarabdha karmas came to an end. This physical birth is given up. Then they don't come back for another birth. So that means moksha already. So that's exactly what it is. Same like Ramakrishna and all these other saints also.
But are these people like Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, are they in a higher plane and then they will come back again to the world to help us in our journey?
Good question. That all depends on the desire of the saint. Some saints do not want that moksha. They want to come back and serve the world. If that desire is there, then they will come back again. God will give them another chance, because you don't want moksha, okay, you come back. How do we know that? Huh? How do we know that? Where is the proof? Chapter 8, verse 6. Go to chapter 8, verse 6. Page 152. At time of death, whosoever the person thinks of, that alone he attains. So if that attitude is, when, of course it doesn't mean that person, but whatever the direction of your thoughts, that you will come back for another birth. So if the desire that saint is there, I do want moksha, I do want all this, I want to come back and serve, yes, by all means you will come back and serve. That depends on the intention of the person also.
You mentioned the mind has four components.
Right.
Chitta,
mana, chitta, buddhi, ahankara.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what is the individual functions of
all the four?
Yeah. Before it goes into. So, mind is full of emotions, right?
The mind, manas is emotion, likes and dislikes.
Yeah.
Buddhi is intellect, which is discrimination. Ahankara is ego, of course. And chitta is the memory bank. All the past memories that we have are all registered. That means our mind does not act from one component. It can act from any component, depending which component is strong. If the ego is stronger in you, ahankar, you will act according to your ego. But if you are on the spiritual path, you develop that intellect, it becomes stronger, then the intellect will in turn suppress the ego, will in turn suppress the emotional mind, will in turn suppress the past memories also. So, out of these four components, these are the four components that basically drive all our actions. We have to decide which way we want to lead our life. And most people lead their life based on the emotional mind or the ego. And therefore, we are always affected by all the past memories, whatever happened to us, all the good and bad things that happened. So the chitta also influences our actions, our present actions. And that's why it's very important to understand the workings of our mind and cultivate the intellect. And there is only one way to cultivate the intellect, which is through study of the scriptures. That's the only way to sharpen your intellect. And the mind can be stabilized through upasana. So you see, you have all the three yogas. The body can be purified through karma yoga, the mind can be focused through upasana, the intellect can be sharpened through jnana yoga. So all the three yogas address your body, your mind, your intellect. So that is what we have to do. We have to use all the sadhanas and put our life into order.
Can I say one more?
Right. Sorry, you? Who's the I? That's right. That's a very good question. Which Ramana Maharishi himself said. Somebody asked him, I want moksha. He said, who's the I? The minute you say, I want moksha, I is what?
Ego.
I is the ego.
Ego.
So, by right, we should not even desire for moksha. We should even just surrender that to the hands of the Lord. The minute I say, I want this, that means it is the ego which is speaking. So, same question was asked Ramana Maharishi. He said, who is I? I is the ego. I is still asking something. I want this, I want that. Of course, your intentions are more noble. You want moksha. But the very fact you say, I want, it still indicates that there is the ego. So let go that ego. Don't worry about moksha. If you put in all the right practice, you will reach the goal. Leave that in the hands of Lord. Because moksha is the Lord's right to grant you moksha. We have to wait for that grace of the Lord.
How do you define moksha?
How you define moksha? Same thing what she said. The first stage of moksha is the Jivan Mukta. How do we define the Jivan Mukta? Look at the last 18 verses of chapter 8. Do I have these qualities? If I have these qualities in abundance, means I am a Jivan Mukta. Then the balance, as I said, the Videha Mukta is to wait for God's grace to burn away all your Sanchit Karmas. Once your Sanchit Karmas are burnt off, you do not take another breath. And very important also, what is your desire? If you still have desire to, you have attachment to your family, or you have desire to come and enjoy some things, or you have desire for heaven, Swarga Loka, then you still won't get moksha. So all the desires also must be diluted, eradicated, and just surrender everything to the Lord and let Him decide what is best for you.
Moksha is actually not a destination, it's actually detachment of the mind.
While living, but after that it is no more birth already. Not coming back for another human birth. So the first stage is learning to detach. That's very important. So Jivan Mukta is very important. And we should see the qualities and keep in mind, read these verses constantly to remind us what we are lacking, so what we should be cultivating. Remove ignorance, yes, correct. And then what you call worship of Lord. And also seva, the service, attitude of right action. So all the karma, upasana, jnana, all three have to come in. But ultimately we must all come to jnana. Without jnana you cannot attain moksha. That is very clear in all the Upanishads is mentioned. That jnana everybody has to come to. Even Bhagavad Gita has mentioned that all the actions that you are doing in chapter 4, verse 33, page 94. Even here in chapter 4, verse 33, page 94 is mentioned, sacrifice in the form of knowledge is superior to sacrifice performed in material things. That means whatever actions that we do, whatever prayers that we do, ultimately the most highest sacrifice is knowledge. One. Secondly, he says what? For all, then we must ask the question, why do we perform actions? So he says here, for all actions without exception culminate in knowledge. The purpose of us performing karma yoga, the purpose of us performing upasana yoga, all these actions that we perform are to prepare us for knowledge. So ultimately we have to come to knowledge. And three very important actions that Krishna says we must never give up, because these help us to purify. What are the three important sadhanas he has listed in chapter 18? If you look at chapter 18, verse number 5, page 306. Chapter 18, verse 5, page 306. So what he said there? Acts of sacrifice, yajna, yajna, dana, tapa, these three things. Yajna means all prayers and rituals. Dhanam, charity. Tapa, austerities. All these three things, he says, na tyajam, do not ever give up. You can give up all other type of actions, but don't give up prayers and rituals, don't give up doing charity, don't give up keeping austerities. Why? The last line says, pavanani manishina. They are the purifiers of people. They help all these actions done with the right attitude. What attitude? Sattvic attitude, which he will explain in chapter 18. There is a sattvic way to do your yajna, sattvic way to do dhanam, sattvic way to do tapas. If you do all these three things in the sattvic way, what happens? Pavanani manishina. They purify us. They purify our mind. They purify our intellect. They purify our body also. And then they bring us to the next path, which is knowledge. So that's why he says, do not abandon acts of yajna, dana, tapa. These three things, karya nevatat, they must be performed. They are compulsory actions for every human being. They are mentioned in the Vedas. They are compulsory actions. One must not only give up, must make sure that you perform them also. So these three sadhanas are very important. People say this scholar said like that, I cannot say those scholars said wrong also because they are the great masters. Sorry, just joking.
Yeah. Our culture recognizes astrology and superstition and stuff like that. But he said if you are the spiritual path and you indulge in this, indicates that one has a weak mind. How far? Because
so on one side we have culture recognizing, and on the other side, Swami says
this. So I'm thinking how we can reconcile.
Okay. See, when the scriptures, no doubt, in the Vedas also, astrology. What is astrology? Astrology is given. Vastu Shastra is there also, how we arrange things in our house to attract positive elements and all that is there. The question is, who is that for? Who is this prescribed for? This astrology, these superstitions, this Vastu Shastra, who is that prescribed for? What type of people? People who have not totally surrendered to the Lord. People who have not reached this level of surrender. So if you don't have the level of surrender, yes, by all means do all that which is prescribed in the scriptures. We are not going against the scriptures. But what Vivekananda is saying, ultimately when you transcend all this, when you have total faith and devotion in God, then all these are meaningless already. Then whatever happens, you accept it. Because why? Then you don't say, oh, you know, because the black cat crossed the road, then this is why it happens. You say what? God, this is your prasadam, I accept it. So to have that level of acceptance, we have to come to that level first. So before that, then we have to accept all this. Then we accept Vastu Shastra, we accept superstitions, we accept astrology, we accept all that. Because we are not ready to surrender. So when that's why our Vedas also, they tell us, do prayers, do rituals. Then the other side, they say, gain knowledge. So then you ask yourself, then do I do that or do I do this? No. The question is, to what type of mind am I? To what level of spirituality have I risen to? If I'm still in that level, then I do prayers and rituals. But once I have come to knowledge, then I find that I want to get away from. I don't stop, I minimize it, but I come more to knowledge. So they are prescribed in the scriptures, but for the different type of devotees who are not ready to totally surrender. Then go ahead and follow this. So you will find a lot of contradictions, but we must understand that the Vedas and the Gita, they are speaking to different level of devotees. So that's why they prescribe different type of sadhanas for different people. Question, then we can end the session today. End with a prayer. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanuramardhanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagadguru. Now just one announcement. Next week there will be a class. We will start chapter 12 and then there will be no class for the next two Saturdays.
Take note 23rd and 30th.